You are listening to a free version of the Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support the show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
Shabbat shalom. My name is Michael Brooks, and this is August 19th. I completely messed up this intro. It is August 19th on the four-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On today's Casual Friday, I get to talk with my good friend, Cliff Schechter, on this Shabbat about the time of the Trump campaign when you need to get rid of a potential Kremlin agent, or at the very least lobbyist, and replace him with a neo-Nazi, but also say you're sorry. How close are we from the weeping, "Look, I just want everybody to love me" press conference? Cliff and I will discuss. Plus, the Justice Department will end the use of private prisons in its federal system. Very, very important move on a very, very important issue. We'll get to that. And the great Jimmy Dore to address a controversy between himself and the Majority Report, to review a new video of Hillary supporters getting confused about quotes. Were they Hillary quotes or Donald quotes? Not good. Not good. I mean, believe me, really not good. New smoking gun bolsters a voting rights case against North Carolina in its effort to suppress the vote, violate civil rights. Ryan Lochte is truly everything people do not like about America. And Angela Merkel says it's not migrants and refugees who are bringing extremism to Germany. It's already there. Get to that. Plus a whole bunch of sound, including a funny moment from the UK where Jeremy Corbyn, maybe again, revealing that he's a little bit more press savvy and has a little bit more sense of how this game works than people give him credit for. What else do we have sound-wise, Matt?
We've got, what you said, Trump expressing regret. Bakari Sellers and Kayleigh McEnany have a discussion on, you know, what's best for black communities as far as economics and policy.
I always think Kayleigh McEnany on that.
And we have Newt Gingrich, actually, calling out some junk medicine of TV doctors.
It's interesting. Wonder why Newt ever never got really on sort of like the Mike Huckabee beet juice train. So we have a great show ahead of you. Obviously on the fun half, we'll take all your calls and IMs, and I will try to get to as many as possible because we're going on vacation next week, but that makes no difference for you because you'll get all brand new content throughout the whole week. That's how we do on the Majority Report. But I will try to get through everything. My preferred style, ladies and gentlemen, is a little bit of stubble. I like that 5 o'clock shadow thing. Sometimes I go for the full beard. I like it. Clean shave, I like it. I like it, but I like the stubble. And even when I'm managing that stubble, I need a great razor. Or if you're like Matt and he's just straight razor clean, as he is this morning, you need a great razor in any scenario. Matt, what kind of razor did you shave with this morning?
I shaved with a Harry's razor this morning.
That's how I whenever I go clean shaven, and even as I'm managing this, I'm using a Harry's razor. And let me tell you something. It's because it's a smooth shave. It's comfortable. It has great glide. And another thing about it, Matt, is the shaving solution. I mean, it's not really something you notice until I feel like you use the Harry's foam or gel. And it's like, wait a second, this is just a lot better. I prefer, I'm a foam guy. It's just objectively better.
Yeah, the foam, I use the foam. It's very sudsy. The one thing I always say about Harry's when I tell people that I switched to Harry's is, unlike the sixth shave with a blade, is about as good as the first one with certain other competitors.
Exactly. And then, of course, there's the price. And all of a sudden, instead of getting to, like, Dwayne Reed, Fort Knox, and it's also, like, it's just they're too up in your business. You go to Dwayne Reed, and all of a sudden, it's just like, where are the razors? Where are the like, it's just like, come on. Like, let me have a little bit of privacy, as Matt would say. It gets shipped directly to your door, and the price just can't be beat. Look, big razor companies have an annoying habit of putting out new models and raising their already high prices. That's right. They give you the Quattro Point whatever the hell, and it's the same as the Quattro Point whatever the heck. Unlike those guys, Harry's doesn't believe in upcharging. That's why they made their razors even better, and they're keeping the prices exactly the same. Harry's five-blade razors now include a softer flex hinge for comfortable glide, trimmer blade for hard-to-reach places, lubricating strip, texture handle for more control when it's wet, and it's still just two per blade compared to four per blade that you'll pay at the drugstore. By owning a factory in Germany where they make the blades, Harry's can produce high-quality razors themselves and sell them online for half the price. Quality is 100% guaranteed, and if you don't like the shave, Harry's will fully refund it. It's an incredible... I mean... It's just a no-brainer. Shaving, you know, you just heard it from Matt. Shaved with Harry's this morning. There's no comparison. Harry's Starter Set is an amazing deal. You get a weighted razor handle of your choice, moisturizing shaving cream, three precision-engineered five-blade cartridges, and a travel cover, all for just $15. I mean, you're literally like at least, I mean... well over half of that for just a normal bluesy blue blahzy blah razor at Dwayne Reed or CVS or whatever, any other drugstore. And for a limited time only, there's a special offer for fans of the show that you can get it where you can get it for less. We've partnered with Harry's to give you five off of your first purchase with the promo code Majority Report. Go to harrys.com right now. Enter promo code Majority Report at checkout. Claim your offer. That's harrys.com. Promo code Majority Report. Matt is putting the link to it on our blog as well. We will be right back with Cliff Schechter on the Majority Report.
You got yourself.
Yeah.
Got yourself.
Yo, I'm living in this time behind enemy lines, so I got mine. I hope you
got yourself.
You from the hood? I hope you
got yourself.
You want beef? Hope you
got yourself.
And when I see you, I'ma take what I want. So you try to front? Hope you
got yourself.
You ain't real, hope ya. My first album had no famous guest appearances. The outcome, I'm crowned the best lyricist. Many years on this professional level. What would you question who's better? The world is still mine. Tattoos real with Godson across the belly. The boss of rap. You saw me in belly with thoughts like that. To take it back to Africa, I did it with Biggie. Me and Tupac were soldiers of the same struggle. You lames to huddle, your team shook. Y'all feel the wrath of a killer. Cause this is my football field. Throwing passes from a barrel, shoulder pads of paddle. But the QB don't stand for no quarterback. Every word is like a sawed-off blast, cause y'all all soft, and I'm the black hearse that came to haul y'all ass in. This for the hood by the corner store. Many try, many die. Come at Nas if you want a war. Get it bloody. I got mine, I hope ya.
Got yourself.
You from the hood, I hope ya.
Got yourself.
You want beef, hope ya.
Got yourself.
And when I see you, I'ma take what I want, so you try to front, hope ya.
Got yourself.
You ain't real, hope ya.
Got yourself.
Yo, I'm the N, the A to the S-I-R. And if I wasn't, I must have been Escobar. You know the kid got his chip tooth fixed. Hair parted with a barber's preciseness. Brave-hearted for life is return of the golden child. Son of a blues player.
Welcome back to the Majority Report. I'm Michael Brooks. And right now I get the great pleasure of hosting Casual Friday. I usually host Monday. I'm in the anchor chair on Friday. And that means that I get to do one very special thing, which is to command Matt to play this very special song to introduce this very special guest.
Cliff Schachter, Libertas LLC, New Media, Public Relations, and Strategy. You want any of these services, you know who you gotta see. Cliff Schachter, Libertas LLC.
Cliff Schachter, welcome.
How are you doing, man?
Doing really well. It's good to be talking with you. How are you doing, Paisan?
Pretty good. You know, it's a crazy world out there. I feel like we've all been put on fast forward since Donald Trump brought his act to the presidential campaign. I don't even just mean the fact that, you know, what he stands for and all of that, but the drama that exists in this guy's world. Every day.
It is
bizarre.
I
don't know how normal people live like that. And I wouldn't say I've got a boring life considering the business that we've all chosen, as Hyman Roth would have said in Godfather 2. That's what I pulled that one.
Hyman Roth would say, he goes, it was the life that we chose. I never took it personal, but not a monument, not a building.
That's right. Because
fair enough.
He got shot through the eye. What are you going to do?
You know who Hyman Roth was played by, right?
I'm sorry?
You know who Hyman Roth was played by, right?
Who was it? I don't remember.
Strauss. Leo's the inventor of the Strauss method.
Oh, very cool.
Very cool. That's my version of Name Drop Friday.
I'm just getting at the point that, like that, we've chosen this business. It's an insane business, and it's always a little bit crazy.
Right.
But, I mean, I've never, you know, and I don't mean this in sort of the sense of his politics are crazy, which they are. You know, his campaign is a complete crap show. I guess that's part of this whole thing. But the bigger, it's just, it's constant drama.
Right.
I mean, the guy can't seem to go survive with, you know, I mean, it's like everything that's been terrible about all of us having to live in news cycles that last 5 minutes is that much worse with Trump. 1 minute, we're finding out the guy, you know, has been advising lobbying firms, you know, Manafort, who's who I'm talking about, in Washington. Within a few days, we've learned that he didn't just bring them onto the case that he claimed, but he was actually advising them, and that made him an unregistered foreign agent. And then, boom, he's gone. In the meantime, we've got the neo-Nazi being put on the campaign, and Bannon. I mean,
Bannon. Well, you know, we'll break down the specifics of those in just a second, because I want you to take us through both of them. But it kind of reminds me, there was a line on 30 Rock, and where Tracy Morgan's character demonstrating a level of self-awareness that Trump would never demonstrate. But he said at one point, he's like, you know, I'm tired of these stories about me having a drug problem, man. I don't have a drug problem. I'm straight up mentally ill. And that kind of reminds me of Trump. So, but I think that Manafort is officially out this morning. That came out about an hour before we went on air. He was clearly already demoted.
And that was, you know, I think anybody who saw that a couple of days ago when that final shoe dropped, there'd now been three stories in a row. The first one about the ledgers with the $12.7 million.
Right.
The second one that he had reached out to the two lobbying firms in D.C. on behalf of the Kremlin-friendly Ukrainian government. And then the final one here that he actually hadn't just reached out to them and connected them, but was actively advising them on how to change public policy to make people feel better about Yanukovych, if I'm pronouncing the name right.
Yanukovych, and to
lose sympathy for Timoshenko. There's another one. You can tell me if I'm pronouncing that
right.
No,
I think you nailed that one.
Who they'd put in prison. And, you know, and so he was doing exactly what the Foreign Registration Act was in 1938 was created for. There's somebody who's working for a foreign government. 1938, interesting time. I wonder why it was created then.
Yeah, right, exactly.
I wonder why Trump people remind you in so many ways of 1938. So, I mean, you know, there's a point to this. And the irony of all of this, Michael, is that Manafort, while clearly having no loyalty to country or, you know, human rights, general progressive principles of post-Enlightenment thinking, and which is a mind, you know, into how corrupt the GOP establishment has gotten, because that's acceptable behavior to them. At the same time, he was had the best GOP establishment ties to the donors, to the operatives, to all the kinds of people that can snipe about Trump in the press and can stop giving him money. And so the irony is that while he may have been completely irresponsible on a different front, which is his connections to the Ukraine and Russia, when it came to sort of smoothing things over with the people in Washington that Trump really does need to have on his side, because it seems like every day now somebody else, two more people came out yesterday, including the guy that wrote the speech for the Benghazi mother, who got up and said those things and said he's going to vote for Clinton. I mean, he's been a speechwriter for Republicans for years. It's new every day that more people are breaking. So Trump needs to hold as many of these people, because it ends up being a signal to that 25 to 30% of Republicans not supporting Trump that, no, you don't have to unite with the party. And
right.
So Manafort was their best way to do that. Instead, they kick him out and they bring in this, you know, looks like this Dunkin' Donuts pounding lunatic in Steve Bannon, who's, you know, a neo-Nazi conspiracy theory alt-right, you know, I mean, every worst
aspect
of the alt-right.
He looks like the guy at the end of, like, one of the Taken movies when Liam Neeson has had to, like, kill an entire human trafficking ring and he's finally about to rescue his daughter. And then he's, like, the guy who's bought the daughter. That's what Ben kind
of
looks like.
Instead of being that chic in the first one,
right.
He could have been the guy on the big boat.
Yeah,
but he's just this disgusting, contemptible figure who has a personal, and again, to bring it back to foreign relations again, well, you know, he's not necessarily in with Putin, but his best bud with Nigel Farage, and was you know, giving that guy free press all over the place around the Brexit vote.
Well, let's get into this is really important, because there's these two advisors exemplify with these two very important tracks, because in some ways I actually think it's not just, I think there's an emerging Republican establishment, frankly, that Bannon represents and Breitbart represents. So it says a lot, though, that, as you said, Manafort, and it isn't just, you know, the Russia and Ukraine stuff. I mean, he did stuff for the ISI, apparently, in the 90s with, you know, the Inter-Services Intelligence of Pakistan, Ferdinand Marcos, Zavimbi in Angola, and everybody, if they go back and study their Zavimbi, I mean, a lot of these sort of, like, most grotesque human rights practices and abuses, like burying people alive, cutting off ears, like, that goes back to Joseph
Basically,
Zavimbi.
If you were a terrible dictator in the 80s, 90s, you know, early 2000s and whatever, if you had Paul Manafort's phone number. The only reason Idi Amin didn't hire him is he got kicked out of office too soon.
Exactly.
Right? I mean.
Exactly. Or maybe he was, you know, Or maybe he was, like, you know.
Maybe the phone call didn't get through.
Yeah, charged too much for
it. Hire him.
So that says a lot that Paul Manafort, as you were saying, the guy who's the window in, who's going to say, look, you can't go and make fun of somebody with a physical disability. You should attempt to not appear overtly racist, homophobic, or anti-Semitic. That's the guy who literally would take money. You know, actually, Mark Ames, I had him on a couple weeks ago to talk about this, and he described
that. Yeah, I listened to that.
Yeah,
when I him. I like Mark.
Yeah, it's great. You know, taste, eat, consume anything for money, right? Like, that was the description. Now we have Steve Bannon, who... Let's describe him a little bit more, because it isn't – he represents, you know, as you say, it's this alt-right stuff. It's much more kind of overtly bigoted. But he's also someone who – you know, his public persona that he's embraced is the Breitbart – you know, heir to Breitbart, bomb thrower, editor, advisor Trump. But he's also a funder of something called the Government Accountability Institute, which fuses, you know – some genuine investigations on corruption and funding, but also is essentially a arm to try to attempt to sort of blur empirical news with empirical reporting with far right wing memes about people like Hillary Clinton.
The propaganda, as I believe George W. Bush once put it.
Right, exactly. So talk a little bit more about this guy, because I don't think he's just... I think that at the very least, and I know that our theory on the show now has been for a while, that this is all the beginning of some Trump media startup. This really shows where the sort of power is heading.
Yeah, and again, we've talked to get also on this show plenty, I'm sure you guys have when I haven't been on. We've talked about it when I have been on, about how the media entertainment and grift complex of the right has taken over the party. And now you hear, not to say that we're geniuses, other people have said it too, but now you hear even right-wing radio hosts like Charlie Sykes, the one from Wisconsin who broke with Trump, coming out and admitting the obvious, which is there's no gatekeeper anymore because people like me destroyed it. We spent 20 years attacking the mainstream media, saying it was all liberal. And now if I go to somebody who sees something on Breitbart and they say to me, why aren't you covering this? And I say, well, it's not true. Here's the debunking in the Washington Post and the New York Times. They're like, oh, well, that's because it's the Washington Post and the New York Times. You know what I mean? So, I mean, so this media universe, right, that these various figures exist in, Limbaugh and Hannity and whatever, Bannon has been a little bit more behind the scenes in that universe. He's been out there, though. He has a radio show on Sirius, I believe. That's part of the Breitbart thing. He's been the publisher. And he, you know, he's been sort of a pioneer in this way. He was an investment banker, which is funny. I mean, the ultimate establishment type thing. At Goldman Sachs.
Yeah, as a Goldman guy. Yep.
Left Goldman, started, you know, something with his name in it, Bannon Group or something of that nature. And they did something which I'll give him some credit for. I ain't give him any credit, but one should, which is he understood the power of media properties. So most of these media properties were much harder to kind of evaluate if you're an investment banker and you're doing mergers and that kind of thing. What's it worth, you know, because a lot of it, it's a more subjective thing. His people were smart enough to kind of look at intellectual property like this and try to find a value for it. And they got lucky. I mean, lucky, smart, whatever you want to say, along the way. They, you know, were involved in some important mergers. He even had a stake in Seinfeld at some point.
Wow.
Kind of ironic that the alt-right guy got rich off of Jews. But
that
in
is,
any case.
That is kind of ironic.
So I mean, did that. So he understands the media very, you know, that well enough. And then he started funding these crazy documentaries. And that's how he met Breitbart, because he funded one of them. It was basically a big wet kiss to how awesome Breitbart was before Breitbart had a heart attack and passed away. And so Breitbart brought him in. He also was a big funder supporter of Sarah Palin. You know, that he made that film about her. What was it called? The ridiculous one. Help me, because it was perfect.
It was like Renegade or something. I don't know.
It was all like the name of it had something to do with how she wouldn't back down.
What was
and
it?
Of course, she quit.
Going Rogue.
Right?
Going Rogue.
Was that it? Okay.
Yeah,
so,
going
I mean,
rogue.
You know, and then she quit her governorship. And right. In any case, so he's, you know, he's been involved on the media side of all this stuff. And yeah, it's been said that Trump wants to maybe start a media network after this that makes Fox look liberal, as scary as that is.
Yep.
And you can see it happening. I mean, Roger Iles joins this campaign, who's been kicked out of Fox. You've got Bannon, who's got funding and connections to the Mercer family, another shadowy group of right-wing nuts who are investment advisors in New York. And are big funders of these of Breitbart. They put $10 million into it and other things. So he's at that. You make a very astute point there, Michael, which is he's at the nexus of what may become the new Republican establishment, right? It almost has in a way. The irony, I mean, not irony, but the sort of self-defeating nature of it is that it's strident. It goes back to paleoconservatism of the kind of where white straight males, you know, were against everyone else. So no longer you won't hear things about Judeo-Christian values because Jews are on the outside. You won't hear any of the sort of pro-immigration or whatever. If you're an immigrant, you're bad. You know, all the kind of stuff that Trump has been doing, the attacks on Islam. This certainly, you know, it fits into these guys' worldview. Problem for them is, you know, it's not 1962 anymore. You know, most of the country is offended by these kinds of things, as they have been for weeks now when Trump's been saying them and as we've watched him tank in the polls.
But isn't
–
and this
guy
is
– thinks, yeah.
No, this is right. I mean, I think this is actually kind of the point that in some ways – I mean, you know, I thought in some respects – I thought Joe Biden's speech at the DNC was in some ways the most effective. And what was so interesting about it was that his speech essentially boiled down to – and it was a – very well-delivered speech, and I think, you know, Joe Biden knows how to give a great speech. But it essentially boiled down to, like, come on, think of how you're raised. You're better than this. And I think that to some degree or another, that is true for a fair amount of Americans. I think you're right about that. But the thing is that
– you know what it is.
What we found, though, is that –
it always was going to turn off the minority vote, although for Republicans, they kind of accept – you know, they're only going to get 8-10% at best of the African American.
Exactly,
vote.
Exactly.
But
and if
they
the strategy,
that they needed a,
if the strategy yeah. though is that if they accept maybe on some level they're not necessarily going to elect a president. They're probably not. But they can gerrymander House districts. They can keep chipping away at voting rights access. And they can build these beachheads where there's this weird reciprocity, especially in these new – because when you mention people like the Mercer family, where, you know – these are ultra affluent versions of the sort of like enraged middle class that Trump is already attracting. They share the same racism. They share the same bigotry.
And the same resentment.
The same resentment.
Kind of like Donald Trump.
Exactly.
Becoming wealthy doesn't get rid of their resentment.
It does not get rid of their
resentment.
And their fear. And that they can create a beachhead in media and in Congress.
Well, they make up for
culture.
The lost Koch brother money, right? The Mercers can step in. I don't think – I'm not saying they have $100 billion.
No, they don't have that
Koch
level.
Brothers, but, yeah. Look, if they can dump $10 million without a second thought into Breitbart, clearly they have enough money where they can do a lot of this kind of stuff.
And you know, it can be
like
more
them.
Potent, Cliff, because I think the thing that we – that the other thing that this election cycle has shown is that when it comes down to it, at the end of the day, the reality is that, you know, the whole Koch brother thing is only interesting to like – a handful of like weird, you know, young guys who get into libertarianism, and then right. other mega plutocrats who want to be able to poison whatever water well they want to poison. And that's pretty much it. You know, the worldview of a sort of like trust fund baby plutocrat MIT engineer who probably actually isn't even personally racist or something like that, and just wants government to sort of work in this just purely as a function of the oligarchy is pretty rare. And I mean, the closest that the alt-right has is maybe someone like Peter Thiel, although some of his politics when it comes to kind of racial things actually runs closer to this Trump Breitbart thing. And that's a much more scary fusion.
Foundation, you've got Jim DeMint, who said at one point, you know, I would rather have 30 committed conservative senators than a Republican majority.
Yep.
And that's kind of the mentality
yep.
that you're seeing here. The problem is, and I think you're right, they could do some things, but when it comes to voting rights and other stuff, their big problem is going to be that unless they can stop the Senate from going Democratic, then you're going to get new and a Democratic president from being elected who doesn't just put on Supreme Court justices, but can fill appeals courts. A lot of people haven't realized, I think it was Kurt Eichenwald wrote this great piece, I remember it's for Politico, that people don't realize of the 13 appeals courts around the country when President Obama came in, only one of them had a Democratic majority. Now nine of them do.
Right.
So Hillary Clinton gets four more years of this. Who knows? So, I mean, you're talking about filling all levels of the courts. So the voting rights stuff and whatever, they're going to lose eventually. Now, they can hold – they can block a lot of legislation, I think, as you're right, if they can keep the House enough gerrymandered, although, you know, that remains to be seen too. So they can create certain power centers. There's no doubt. But in the end, overall, they can't pass anything they want except for maybe in a few states here and there. You know, they're going to be a minority. But again, as Jim DeMint said, maybe that's okay. Maybe in the end, they'd rather have a pure 30% minority than a majority, and they still make millions off of their media properties and get to say whatever they feel like. They don't have to be, quote-unquote, politically correct.
Right. So. And also, and then as far as just this – and then I think – it can go in either direction. I mean, demographically and culturally and in terms of people's changing attitudes and millennials being far more progressive on economic and social issues, we look like we're potentially moving in some very positive directions. The danger, I guess, that people would raise on the flip side is then the sort of quote-unquote responsible corporate special interest money just gets dumped into Democrats, and basically what you have is you have you know, an internally divided Democratic Party, which you already do in some respects, fighting it out on, you know, real policy stuff. And then you have this, like, absolutely insane party.
Things there.
Yeah.
It matters where the energy is in the party, because that's going to happen anyhow.
Right.
You can't be scared of adding voices and adding support. And if the business conservative community is horrified enough by this and they want to come along, then come along. But it doesn't mean that Elizabeth Warren loses her position or Bernie Sanders or other people. My view of all of that is if these guys are determined to be that kind of a minority, let's help them into that.
Right.
And because it's not just like even the big business guys. The biggest story, you know, we knew to a certain degree that once Trump was the nominee, we knew he was going to offend the Latino community, and he has done exactly what we expected. We knew he wasn't going to win over any African Americans. But I think the biggest story that the media is catching on to now is that college-educated whites, mm-hmm. the solid Republican, you know, constituency starting in 1952, and in recent years, because of their rejection of science, you know, on numerous levels, they've been losing bits and pieces of that community every election. It's been their majority's gotten smaller and smaller. Well, Trump is blowing it up completely,
right?
To the point where Hillary is probably going to be the first person to win college-educated whites, the first Democrat in, you know, 70, 80 years.
Right.
Well, that changes everything. Because that's why states like Georgia are in play, right? You've got a lot of,
yes.
It's a new South state where you've got a lot of people moving to the Atlanta area and other areas right. with, you know.
Well, and obviously so, North Carolina, I mean, even more so
North
than
Carolina
Georgia in
with
some
the
ways.
Research
are,
triangle.
Right, yeah,
so
right,
suddenly,
exactly. Right.
Right, suddenly they're not going to be able to win North Carolina. I mean, Georgia's got 16 electoral votes. That's the second biggest state right now Republicans have as a solid, in the, or it isn't solid anymore, but have had as a solid Republican state. After Texas, and Texas isn't that far down the road.
Dude, let me actually, Cliff, this is fascinating. I want to connect a question to this, though, and get your thoughts on it, because one of the things that's mm-hmm. fascinating specifically about the trend in the South specifically is that, you know, obviously, historically, the Southern Democratic Party was literally like the apartheid party, and the real mm-hmm. hardcore ones became Republicans. But even through the kind of, you know, modern political era, regardless of what I don't want to kind of relitigate Jimmy Carter or Bill Clinton or whatever, but those guys were from the conservative wing of the Democratic Party. And part of that was just because they were from the South.
They were Southern,
right? They're Southern
exactly
politicians.
Right.
So now, yep. though, what's fascinating is that as, you know, the white vote in the South has really flocked overwhelmingly to Republicans, even more so than in the 1990s, I think. Now, though, you have this fascinating situation where what is the emerging Democratic Party of a place like North Carolina and Georgia? It's African American, Hispanic, young, and socially liberal whites. All of a sudden, you know, Southern Democratic parties could be even more progressive than, you know, Northern Democratic traditional machines.
Certainly,
and that's fascinating.
Yeah.
I mean, it potentially changes the whole kind of equation of how we think about, you know, just even regional politics.
Right. Well, think about it for a second. I mean, granted, a couple points of it may in the end be due to Tim Kaine being on the ticket because he's a Virginian.
Right.
If you think about the fact now that in multiple polls, Hillary Clinton has been up double digits in Virginia.
Yeah.
Then you're looking at a bastion of what was once the solid South has now moved to the left of many states. It's well to the left of the swing state I live in. You know, I mean, it becomes a solid Democratic state, and suddenly, you know, you don't have to accept a sort of centristy third way Mark Warner anymore. You can elect
right.
a progressive from Virginia. I would argue that we're getting there in North Carolina, and you won't be that far. So you're exactly right. I mean, really, the split is, and that's the difference, is the split is there's the southern states now, they tend to be more the border states, that never had the nearly as large African-American populations. Kentucky, Arkansas, Tennessee to a certain degree, although Nashville maybe a little bit, and mm-hmm. Memphis, but still overall. And those are the state, and then they don't have the kinds of industries overall that are attracting college-educated whites there.
Right.
So those are the ones that remain hardcore Republican, but the ones that have the large African American populations, because don't look now, but guess what's going to happen also in a few cycles? Mississippi is heading Democratic because 37% of the voting population there is African American.
Right.
All you need, even though you're only winning 10% or 15%, if you could raise that 10 to 15% of the white vote there to 20%. You can win Mississippi now,
right?
Because there's a few percent that's Latino. So
right.
yes, it's changing, and then especially the new South states where you're adding college-educated whites hand over fist. Virginia, North Carolina, Georgia. Guess where else? South Carolina,
right.
Which is right. You know where you've got sort of more progressive Northeasterners. You've got an older retiring to some of these places. You've got, as you said, a younger population, and then you combine it with a minority population. Changes everything, and so.
These yeah.
retrograde politics of theirs that offends not only minorities, but offends college-educated whites as a block, you know, where that this alt-right crap doesn't appeal to anybody with a college education.
And the other thing that's fascinating about it too, and it's, I think it's really important because, and I think these arguments are very, very important. Like, I'm a big fan of "Listen, Liberal" by Thomas Frank, and I have, you know, I have big concerns in some respects about a Hillary Clinton presidency. But the distinction that's also important when we talk about the longer term trends and what we're seeing in the South is that it's not just a patchwork of like, okay, so you'll have more sort of like. You know, I think what people would have associated with the 1990s, maybe like, okay, these are more educated voters, they're more socially liberal, but they're still probably going to support, bad trade deals and want, you know, really regressive and racist crime policies, which at times was, you know, what the Democratic coalition was, if we're being frank.
Sure.
But if you look at the reality now, like even if you go to Silicon Valley, and of course, like the actual, you know, C-level, most of those guys, most of the, and a few women are certainly, I mean, many of them are, you know, more obviously to the right economically. But if you take it down to the level of like engineers and people who are affluent and doing well, a lot of those people are giving contributions to Bernie Sanders. So even when you talk about, you know, the research triangle, those educated liberal whites, that looks different than it did 20 years ago. That includes a much more economically progressive and a policy set and awareness of inequality. So it isn't.
I know at least even here in a place like Cincinnati, that is a bit of a, for the first time, you know, in about 40, 50 years, has started to become a growing sort of city again with a lot of the kinds of jobs where people, college grads, are moving here or whatever. I can tell you that I know at least I wouldn't say a half dozen, but a bunch of Wall Street types that live here, you know, that work with the markets that are Bernie Sanders supporters. So it's not as unusual as everybody thinks it is.
Not at all, because the politics are changing for everybody. And again, it's even if you're in that sort of that upper middle class set, and maybe the kind of like stereotypical, like, you know, I don't know, Bill Bradley, Howard Dean, Barack Obama voters, they're all kind of moving to the left too. And they're turning into Bernie voters.
Well, I think they've seen a lot of the same things. Yeah. You know, I mean, if they're not completely self-involved and just care at the end of the day, you know, how much money is in my account? I don't care about anything else. If they have anything else out, you know, if they have any connection to the greater earth besides their own personal bank accounts, but like I'll give an example of having kids. Well, you kind of care. You care about the fact that there may be no jobs out there for them when they graduate from school.
Yep.
You care that the people that would ignore global warming, that that's going to affect the quality of your kids' lives. These are important things. So I think you are seeing changes around that. That affects people who work, you know, with markets. It affects people who I know who are in tech type jobs who've become incredibly liberal that weren't once. I mean, I've seen people move markedly to the left. So I think you are seeing you're seeing changes, very big generational changes. Even look, the classic thing was, I think it was the poll that Public Policy Polling took that showed Trump only up 6 points in Texas. Hillary was winning everybody under 45.
Absolutely.
Like, she was up by like 6 points or something.
Definitely.
It was the over 65 set that gave Trump such an advantage that he was able to overcome that. Well, we all know there's you know, those things they say about death and taxes being the only sure things. They're not going to live forever.
Right.
And so you're going to need a lot of people to change their opinions. You're going to see this.
I bet that Donald Trump and Peter Thiel both think that death and taxes are negotiable. But
that's a good point.
Yeah. But
although I think Peter Thiel, after hearing him speak, I think he's Satan in disguise. There's just, he's got a satanic quality about him. I don't know what it is, but he's.
I hope you're co-named in the lawsuit that puts us out of business.
Me too. It'd be nice if I become famous for helping drag you guys down.
Yes. No. He's a truly, truly awful. Cliff, we only have a couple minutes left, but I would love to touch on this before we get off. I just think that this is another thing that's so in line with everything we've been talking about, and it's really serious news. And I mean, I've been talking about private prisons now for several years. Actually, one of my best friends from college has done academic research on this and been an activist on this issue. His name's Christopher Petrella. Mm-hmm. And we did an interview, I think it was the first interview I ever did for the Majority Report in 2013, actually. We talked about private prisons. It's kind of crazy. But the Justice Department has issued basically a new rule saying that they are going to completely phase out their use of private prisons. Now, obviously,
right. No new contracts,
and it's done, and it's based off of research on everything from mayhem and facilities to recidivism. Obviously, this is still a major justice issue on the state level and the local level, and also I would also add it's very important that these companies are also in the detention business when it comes to migrants and refugees. So it's a bigger issue than that. But this is an incredibly important step in the right direction. And also, on the hobby course, but we got to admit, again, all the criticisms of all of these conventional Democratic leaders, this isn't happening under a Republican administration.
Yeah, with the private prisons. Yep. Look, there's just no doubt that it's a huge moment. We have to, what the old saying about a gift horse, I mean, in the end here, is it perfect? No.
Right.
But I don't think most of us expected this to come. I've been involved in a number of issues that I've worked on, having, the Innocence Project, prison rape prevention, a variety of things. Private prisons always have a way of coming into this. That's how I originally, got into the work I do around guns and other stuff. I was almost went into criminology, and these issues are important to me. So paying people in the manner we did and allowing them to have private prisons and sort of saying, sure, cut back their food so you can make a bigger profit. I mean, it was always the worst.
Yep.
To me, making prisons private is even worse than charter schools and some of these other things. It was always it made no sense to me. And so the research has shown it that these prisons don't work, that they commit all sorts of human rights abuses. And it's an enormous first step, because remember, it's when the government does things like this, it was Truman who first sat there and even FDR before him, I think, and didn't allow segregation in federal contracts. And then Truman with the army, that's where it starts. It always starts with the government, but these kinds of things make their way into the populace. It's a huge cultural message, and their stock fell by 50%. So
it's great.
Anybody investing in them probably had a bad day too.
Well,
it's only a good thing.
I don't have any empathy for Michael Jordan.
Was Michael Jordan investing in private prisons?
Michael Jordan, I believe, actually was invested in private prisons. Yes, that was a story.
He's going to have to.
That's true, right, Matt? Is that a confirmation? All right. You know what? I had heard that. Let me add a very big caveat around that.
Before Peter Thiel comes after, you're going to get sued by Michael Jordan.
Oh, man. Well, Michael Jordan can invest in whatever he wants. He's the best basketball player of all time.
Well, he can. It doesn't mean he should.
Yeah. Trying to cover myself here a little bit, Cliff. Jesus. All right.
I want you to get in trouble.
Yeah, of course.
No, I'm kidding.
No,
of course.
It actually does look like it. It actually was well reported. But regardless, that is an incredibly important step on private prisons. And it really, it's just kind of fascinating that we're at a time when, white nationalism is back in the mainstream. And it never left if you were on the receiving end of it in terms of policing, housing discrimination, prisons, and everything else. But the kind of overt nature of it. But then at the same time, we're also, we also have some actual movements now. We also have this Justice Department getting rid of private prisons. These things are not nothing. And so
they don't have it in a vacuum. They're all related to each other.
Right.
The energy is in a certain direction, and it's not in the direction, at least in the Democratic Party, of conservatism. And the Republican Party is in the direction of insanity. But I think that further is going to weaken the right wing. So they're splitting amongst themselves, and that that can't be good for them.
Not good. Not good.
Well,
by the way,
they're fighting it out with Bill Kristol and, calling him anti-Semitic names on the front page of Breitbart. That's a way they can split their own movement up.
Look, if you want somebody to just occasionally mail in an article for a couple $100 to call Bill Kristol anti-Semitic stuff, I'll do it.
I don't know them personally, but I think you should.
I'm totally,
there
no
may
problem.
Be a business model yet in that.
Yeah. Actually, yeah.
You throw in Charles Krauthammer and you may be all set.
Tales of the Crypt. All right, Cliff.
There you go.
Thank you so much, buddy. It's always a great time talking with you, man.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me on, always.
All right. Be well, brothers. Talk to you soon.
All right. Bye. Bye.
Okay, everybody. We are going to take a brief musical interlude and come right back with the great Jimmy Dore.
Our general just like a Thomas Sankara, and them can't stop the tanker, yeah. Come now, for general, a general, not a chief of staff. Me no play blackjack, I'm a no bed pan a house. Highly Selassie, I decrease with endowse. Honorable rebel with a cause. Oscar, he not a cool and deadly. One man army, cool and deadly. Oscar, he not a cool and deadly. One man army, cool and deadly. Yeah. Me say me tougher than the seed as a Lebanon. I come to lead out Selassie I battalion. A rigorous routine keep this natty strong. Judge a decrease to ice sweet like cinnamon. Hard from the yard, me no do it for medallion. Style of the sun, I and I a real African. Me no kin feet nor frolic with vagabond. Mission oriented, something like a mini Farrakhan. Only for the youth, I and I to the Vatican. No wildfire, this a rational rebellion. Something like another Zerubbabel in a Babylon. I and I a direct descendant of Abraham. Over all the mounts, I gave dominion. One go ask me brother than Benji or Simeon. Not a dread this man almost the leaves if I'm in the yarn. Still be land you Jagiva ya winning hand. Oscar, he not a cool and deadly. One man army.
Welcome back to the Majority Report. I am Michael Brooks. Joining us now is the great Jimmy Dore. What's up, Jimmy?
Hey, Michael, how are you doing?
I'm doing really well, Jimmy, from the Jimmy Dore Show, that inventively named show.
Yeah. It's called eponymously named. That's what they call it, eponymous. Right? Did you ever go, kid? Oh, hang on, my thing came out. Oh, watch your mouth.
What happened? Whoa, anyway, whoa.
Hang on a
whoa,
second.
Jesus.
When I was a kid, I would go to the zoo. My favorite animal was always the eponymous.
That's hilarious. So
I'm trying. I'm starting off with puns, and then we're going to work our way into political satire.
How about we? Yeah, we start with puns, and then we end with personal insults. I like. Do you like reggae, Jimmy? Just parenthetically.
Of course. Who doesn't like reggae?
I don't know. I feel like I actually stopped dating a girl once because she didn't like reggae. It just disturbed me. I was like, what's the matter with you? Like, you can't be a good person if you don't like it on some level.
What's so, not to, to like about reggae?
I brought you in with some Jesse Royal. That's why I just wanted to let you know.
Oh, okay.
He had some very good.
I'm also a fan of the steel drum music.
There used to be a Jamaican dude who played steel drum where I grew up in Western Mass, and his name was Mentos. And he always played like the same 3-song rotation on the steel drum. And like literally.
Let me guess. He started off with Spirogyra.
I think
that is
totally possible. And one of them was probably like a few of my favorite things. And then, he was a great guy. But look, Jimmy, before we get to this, and by the way, I just want to let you know, Jesse Royal is very dope. Going back to one of our earlier texting conversations, there is a big controversy between you and the Majority Report.
Yeah, I've kind of had it with the Majority Report.
Because apparently somebody sent us this video where...
Oh, you see me take your boy down? That's Sam Cedar. I owned him.
I have never seen Sam look more menopausal in my life, and you weren't even talking to him personally.
Well, you know what, though? I could tell Sam was a little menopausal because he had some whiskers on his chin. Did you notice?
I did. I tried to tell him to not go out like that, but he doesn't listen to me because he's very... He thinks every TV appearance is like his bar mitzvah. He doesn't get it. So... So you did a video where they were doing a panel on MSNBC and you gave them the business. But the thing about it is somebody was like, you included that apparently you were also trashing Sam, but I watched the video and there was one conspicuous thing missing from this trashing of Sam. Will you explain that to me?
Well, the thing missing from the trashing of Sam and my video was the trashing of Sam.
Yeah.
That was the only thing. Up till that, that was good. They got it right on point until they said I was trashing Sam.
I was waiting because I enjoy watching people, I mean, trash Sam. And then if an actual, like, professional comedian who I like and respect was going to do it, I thought it would be an even higher level than, like, you know, butt plug 62 calling him gay. I mean, I enjoy that on Twitter, okay? So I was expecting something really amazing.
I mean, you know, you got to be honest. I mean, I will give props where it's the due. Gay 62 or butt plug 62 does have a good gaydar.
Yeah, it's confusing it with male menopause. But so basically, though, actually, you were doing a segment, and let's just talk about it for a minute. And obviously, with the sympathy to me that I still. And waiting for my contract in the mail from MSNBC, personally. So, no, but the segment was basically that, you know, Chris Hayes and Co. were talking about how they were disturbed, and we've talked about it on this show a number of times, that Hillary Clinton was eager to take the John Negroponte appointment. If you know anything about John Negroponte, his record in Latin America is like, I'm not even going to do a glib analogy. It's an obscene, disgusting record, which leaves him complicit in everything from coups to death squads. And then there's also, you know, talk that Hillary Clinton might actually like Henry Kissinger's endorsement. And of course, she, you know, vigorously defended Henry Kissinger during the primary when Bernie critiqued her. And so your point was that, like, wait a second, this is news to everybody? Didn't we say this for months? And Sam was the one who on the, first of all, we've all said it here for months, and he pointed out it's not just the endorsements, it's also what she did in Honduras, personally.
Right, Sam actually made that point. And, so it kind of looks bad for, so that's the whole thing. They're all, you know, Joan Walsh was famously on Twitter calling everyone who criticize Hillary Clinton a sexist or a misogynist or a Bernie bro, even females who criticize Hillary. She, my friend Katie Halper, she said, "Oh, Katie, I don't know what you're going through, but I hope you get over it soon." So it's nice when other women condescend to other women when they're having a different point of view because you're farther along in the industry. So that's the kind of person Joan Walsh is. Okay. So, and so now
the opinion, you know, of Jimmy Dore, I will say so cowardly as a caveat.
No, that's okay. No, I don't want to drag any. And by the way, I used to love Joan Walsh, right? She used to be, when she would show up on Hardball, I was like, oh, great, a breath of fresh air.
No, I want to say, Jimmy, that, because I want to get to, like, the bigger conversation, though, than all of these, like, sort of personalities. But I said that a couple days ago on the show. I was like, look, man, I was never, like, a big, like, I wasn't ever, like, sort of like, oh, my God, I can't wait till Joan Walsh's column comes out. But I always remembered her totally on Hardball. You know, Matthews would be like, but Joan, why, you know, women are wearing dresses. Can they really compare, you know, command an A1 bomber? And she would be like, yeah, Chris, they can. And he'd be like, oh, Joan, you're amazing. You know, like, so I remember that. Yeah, she always did a really good job on Hardball. She wrote some good columns. And this election cycle, man, it has been... I mean, I guess the only word for those arguments back in the primary is breathtakingly disingenuous. It would be the only way to describe it. But, I mean, do you think it's a positive thing, though, now that people like Joan Walsh, though, are all of a sudden, now that the primary's over and it looks like Hillary will definitely win, that they're actually starting to say, wait a second, we might need to be a little bit more on guard, a little bit more critical, particularly on foreign policy when Hillary's president?
Let me just say that is a great way to frame it. That would make me feel better and sleep better. But it was disgusting to me to see these liberal journalists all of a sudden in August, you know, 3 months before the election, realize that Hillary Clinton is horrible. They were flummoxed. They had literally Chris Hayes had his hands over his head and he goes, you know, on foreign policy, now that she's taking advice from Negroponte and Kissinger, if Russia invades the Ukraine, and then he puts his hands over his head, and I'm like, Chris, Chris, did you just wake up out of a cave? Were you in a cave for the last year and a half? Because that's what Bernie Sanders supporters were screaming about. That's what Susan Sarandon was screaming about when she came on your show.
Did you see, Jimmy, did you hear the interview that I did with Mark Ames? I mean, no, or watch it, but I talked with Mark Ames a couple weeks ago, and he actually made this really, there was this point about how, like, you know, it's really subtle, but, like, basically Obama has blocked a serious arms buildup in the Ukraine. And in Ukraine, and it is definitely not in any way demonstrated that Hillary Clinton would follow the same course. So you're totally right. But I want to, you're just right about that. And of course we were always right. And I mean, I can only have the best case scenario interpretation because I want the best case scenario interpretation because that's the world we're living in now. But I remember during the primary, you know, like people defending, I mean, but it went back to the 80s. I mean, people attacked Bernie for supporting the Sandinistas. And of course, like, the Sandinistas are far from perfect. But let me tell you, if in the 1980s, as far as I understand, I mean, I wasn't really around that way in the 80s. But if you weren't supporting the Sandinistas, then you were supporting, like, Reagan war crimes in Central America. Like, what? You were supposed to support the Sandinistas, you fucking morons.
Yes. Well, this is what I'm saying. So what bothers me about people like Joan Walsh, you know, they also use the white privilege. What is that? They were told this stuff before, right? Mm-hmm. They had this information, and then they had amnesia. For some reason, they had amnesia. Like, oh, that's right. Hillary Clinton is a warmonger. I remember when voting for the Iraq War used to be a disqualifier. Now ignoring it is the progressive thing to do.
Well, I just think talking about voting for Iraq is just really, like, not providing a safe space for her campaign. Can I play something for you, Jimmy? Because this will I'm going to take what I'm going to do is I take you up in an emotional crescendo because right now you're already a little pissed. And now I'm going to play you sound that's going to make you really pissed before we get back to the reggae and the movie recommendation. So this is Rania Kalik, who was at the DNC for Real News. And I want to give a caveat that anytime you do, like, vox pop questions with people, like, you can always find people in literally any crowd of people and make them look dumb, right? So I'll give that usual caveat. But she's asking Hillary supporters, is this a Donald Trump quote or a Hillary Clinton quote? And this quote, this quote about Iran is great because we're going to agree and we're going to make fun of them. But there's also going to be one thing in here that you and I actually might disagree with and we could debate a little bit, but it's hysterical. So let's take a listen to this. This is Ronnie Kalik for Real News at the DNC.
I want the Iranians to know that if I'm president, we would be able to totally obliterate them. Who said that one?
That was probably Donald Trump.
Hillary Clinton. Yes.
That's a good one. Although she's still in favor of the deal. That was her talking tough because, you know, to be the first female commander-in-chief, she has to make sure people believe that she's willing to use military force.
Right. So you've got to, like, threaten to obliterate Iran.
Threaten to obliterate Iran, yes.
I want the Iranians to know that if I'm the president, we would be able to totally obliterate them.
Donald Trump.
Are you sure?
Yes.
Hillary Clinton.
Said that? I'm surprised. Because she's also about diplomacy as well, so. But I get it. That's a power move. I understand. She is presidential and she's going to lead the country in a great
place.
So.
Well,
that can happen, yeah. The Iranians have never been the most popular government around, so.
I advocated tying the...
Okay, Jimmy, have at it.
Hey, I get it. That's a power move. So I'm down...
Hey, it's a power move. It's great.
So this is what drove, I think, Bernie Sanders supporters crazy all through the primary, this complete crazy double standard that some Democrats have for Hillary Clinton. Like, so if a Republican, so the Iraq War was bad, but only bad for George Bush and Dick Cheney. Hillary Clinton, that's not bad for her. There was a mistake, and she said she was sorry for it, and Joy Behar says, get over it. How long are you going to quit crying, keep crying about that? So, and here we hear it here. I knew exactly what the quote was that they were going to use. Yes, she said that.
Yep.
Yes, she said that. She also said that she's not for a wall, building a wall on the Mexican border, but she is for a barrier. So you want to put some Visqueen down? What are you talking about, a barrier?
And by the way, I just want to say, to be really clear, not only did she say that comment about Iran, and I have one pushback on this, but I want to be really clear before I get to that, that it's like that old line, I forget who said this, but it's like the only way it would be taken out of context is if right before she had said it, I would be a fucking maniac to say this, but she didn't.
She said that
straight up.
She said that. I played that clip on my show before, so I'm familiar with it. I showed all these clips of, you know, why is it bad if Donald Trump says it, but if Hillary Clinton actually says it, it's okay. She said she's for a barrier between Mexico and the United States. To me, that sounds like a wall. I don't think she's talking about saran wrap. Okay, so, and she said this thing about...
Well, I think the word wall is very triggering.
Yes, so, sure it is.
So I think that...
This is my problem with...
A barrier can be a safe space. Sorry.
Yes, it could be. Well, this is my problem with that panel. Like, they're all acting like they just woke up yesterday and they figured out Hillary Clinton is a horrible war hawk. She has always been a war hawk. And it's like those people who said, she's the most corrupt politician to run in my lifetime. They go, do you have any proof of quid pro quo? That's not what we're talking about. So there's all these disingenuous arguments or defenses. And that's what's supposed to separate us, Michael, from conservatives. As liberals are supposed to be consistent. We're supposed to apply the same standard to ourselves as we apply to our opponents. And when I saw half the Democratic
Party...
Well,
not myself personally, Jimmy. I would like to enjoy my own personal hypocrisies. Thank you very much.
Yes. I certainly... You know, an artist creates his own moral universe.
Yes, that's...
The point is...
Exactly.
You know who taught me that? Woody Allen. Anyway.
Oh! Wow. Jesus.
That's a line from Bullets Over Broadway, by the way. He wrote it. So
that's a funny movie.
Can I real quick? I know I don't want to, but Paul Manafort.
Yeah.
He just got demoted.
Yes.
And they brought in this guy who runs a racist website.
Yes.
And, you know, as much of a corrupt piece of crap as Paul Manafort is, he barely cracks the top three of the most awful human beings to work at Trump's campaign manager.
Not even remotely. He's like,
right?
I'm just like a corrupt hack who will literally take money from everybody, but I'm not like a personal odious racist who looks like the guy at the end of the Taken movies who Liam Neeson has to shoot because he bought his daughter. I mean, yeah. There are some tears here. I mean, you know, but the only thing, Jimmy, the last thing I say about Hillary, and I'm not going to try to convince you to be to vote for Hillary, because you live in California, so who cares? Just like I live in New York, so who cares?
Did you see who she appointed as her transition head?
She appointed a guy named Ken Salazar, who is part
Ken
of
Salazar,
a,
who,
he's part
who
of a Maoist
partner.
A Maoist reading group that I used to be part of. He's very left-wing. And what he wanted to do is he was a lobbyist for the mining industry, and he wanted to create a safe space where they could express their own narrative on our public lands.
And they could embed it right in their own.
They could have their own performative narrative, which wasn't superseded by the hegemonic demands of Bernie Bros on social media.
So do people know you're kidding when you talk like that? Because I didn't at first.
Now I'm insulted. I think half of the audience knows I'm kidding.
Okay. Well, I didn't for a long time. I hate you.
Oh yeah. How dare you? How dare you? I finally saw that, Jimmy. How dare you?
How dare you? How dare you?
But really quick, Jimmy. Get to Ken Salazar in a second, but I got to make one serious point. In that video, David Korn, he was laughing about her talking about obliterating Iran, but he made one important point, which was that she supports the Iran deal. And, you know, as far as I'm concerned, as far as voting for president goes, and as far as what the actual range of choice is, like, Barack Obama beating Mitt Romney and me supporting Barack Obama over Mitt Romney, which I did for several reasons, not least of which some of which were superficial. I just like Obama better than Mitt Romney. Okay. But
do you like it? Do you like it when he's out there pushing for the TPP in a lame duck session?
I certainly don't. But I also know that Mitt Romney would be pushing for the same thing. And my point is, but this is the serious point, Jimmy, is that the Iran deal alone is enough. Like that deal is alone enough of a reason to justify Obama over Romney to me.
I mean,
not to
mention
Supreme Court shit, but that one deal alone. More than makes up. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we're living in a country where the income disparity is greater than it was during the Gilded Age.
Yes.
Half of all wage earners earn less than $30,000. People are being crushed by debt just to go to school.
Yep.
People still go bankrupt when they get sick. There's millions of people still without health care. And this is in the richest country the face of the earth has ever seen.
Yes, absolutely.
And guess what Hillary Clinton means? She means more of that. And if you think climate change is a problem, Hillary Clinton claims that she accepts science. That's her big thing. She accepts science. Why doesn't she accept the science of fracking? Fracking is killing climate change. It is killing it is way worse than carbon dioxide because it releases methane. Anyway, the point is things are going to get worse under Hillary Clinton. They're not going to get better. She doesn't have any plans for fixing things. And if you think Trump was a monster, the next Trump is going to be even worse because economic insecurity, when the elites turn their back on workers and the country, it sets the stage for makes those workers vulnerable to demagogues and racists like Donald Trump. And if they don't, when is the Democrats going to start acting like a Democrat? She just pointed a guy who couldn't be more Republican as her transition team, right? This guy's fourth. He's not a registered lobbyist. He's a partner in one of the most powerful lobbying firms in the country. He's the partner. He's not a registered lobbyist. He's the damn partner. He famously said that he has never seen a case that fracking has caused any problems for anyone. This is the guy she just appointed as the head of her transition team, which is a very important position. So all these people who say, see, I feel good about voting for Hillary, you're voting for a Republican.
Oh, wait, but you didn't. But Jimmy, we got to get to other shit, man. But you didn't. The Iran deal alone, because here's my thing. Everything you said in terms of what the world is in right now and the records and the history, you already know that I agree with. And I'll say right now personally that poverty specifically is not an abstract issue to me. I grew up, like, my family dealt with homelessness issues growing up, which is not something I usually talk about publicly at all. And right around the time I don't know, 11 years old or something, was when Bill Clinton signed welfare reform and Hillary Clinton totally supported it. So I don't need to be convinced or cajoled about any of that. But, I mean, there's not even a but. It's just a reality. There's descending orders of worse. And the other thing that's also important to say is that you think Democrats have gotten worse. I think Democrats are just as bad as they've been for decades. And now for the first time in modern political history, you have a counterweight that it can at least plausibly fight on the inside against some of the stuff, which is why Hillary Clinton has already had to say and move to positions that she clearly didn't want to do when she first started.
And she's clearly going to turn her back on all that stuff.
We'll see. I know what she, I actually could predict, but she won't. And she also won't turn her back on that Iran deal if it keeps working, which again, to me, it's like, you know what? Not obliterating Iran, having another major war in the Middle East. Is it worth me going in and spending a minute to go vote? Yeah, fuck it. Yeah, it is.
Here's she loves to play both sides too. She's a progressive who gets things done, and progressives don't appoint lobbyists as their transition team head. That's not what progressives do. So to show how much she's on both sides of this issue, you remember how Sam made the point about Honduras and how it doesn't look good for her because of Negroponte and the death squads and all that stuff.
Yep.
Tim Kaine was a missionary in Honduras.
Well, that was in the 80s. So he was a missionary while Negroponte was backing that stuff in Honduras.
So talk about playing both sides of it. She's got a guy who was a missionary and a guy who was setting up death squads at the same time.
She brings people together, man.
She really, maybe she that's brings, it. Maybe yeah. she's the ultimate unifier. Maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah. Well, the last.
There's a good chance. There's a good chance I'm wrong about everything I say.
Sorry, not sorry.
Sorry, not sorry.
Well, the one thing.
But Michael.
Yeah.
But you know, you recognize all that the Democratic Party is basically the Republican Party from 1992. And in fact, we instituted their health care plan they came up with in 1992. So the Democrats are, if you look at.
That was the case for decades. I mean, I guess what I'm saying right now is that.
No, it wasn't.
No,
it wasn't.
During the 90s? Are you kidding me? Bill Clinton was so much more to the right than even Obama. And now, post Obama, you have a party where, you know, it's still led by Hillary Clinton, which is far, far, far from my choice. But no, I mean, several years ago, you didn't have Bernie Sanders, did not have the power he had. You don't have Elizabeth Warren. I know it pisses people off that she didn't endorse Bernie, but she is absolutely more progressive. And even people that are less high profile, like Jeff Merkley or Tammy Baldwin, these people they weren't even there before. And they're pushing some actual progressive agendas. So now it's not that it's a Republican Party of 1992. There's actually a fight inside it, which barely even existed, especially in the 90s, when it literally was just like, you know, abortion can be legal and we don't totally hate gay people. And now let's go deregulate Wall Street. So it's actually gotten better.
Well, you probably, you know, you're a little older than me, so you probably know about the 90s. I agree with you about that, about the 90s and Bill Clinton. That's when the shift happened. The shift happened after Dukakis. What happened was the DLC got started then by Bill Clinton and Al Gore, and the DLC was a Democratic Leadership Council.
Yeah, starting in the 80s, yep.
Yeah, so that's when they decided, hey, why do we let Ronald Reagan and the Republicans beat us on these social issues, and let's also get in bed with Wall Street and big corporations and take their money too. And we'll just kind of be different around the edges. And that's kind of what happened ever since then. And that's why we have these corporatist parties. That's why we have Bill and Hillary making hundreds of millions of dollars from the people they're supposed to be regulating. And that didn't used to happen before. Like I made this point before, it used to be in the general election, you had the Republican Party nominee, and he would be the guy who was pro-business. And you had the Democratic nominee, and he would be the guy who was going to speak up for regular people and working families. And now that's taking place. That debate is now taking place inside the Democratic primary.
Yes.
That's where that's happening.
I agree, to a large extent, agree with that. I think that's true. I think you and I think it's in some ways it almost becomes like a useless argument because it's so funny because the most intense thing that we disagree about, which we totally do with the Bernie or bust thing, 100%. It's like the 2% that we disagree about is magnified over the 98% that we're completely on the same page on.
Right.
So it starts to become like, I agree. Oh, totally. Absolutely. Fuck you.
Well, here's what I don't get. Right. It's like, why all of a sudden get back to that video clip of Chris Hayes and Joan Walsh and Sam. Why is it that all of a sudden, see, Sam was always awake. Sam
yes.
never pretended Hillary
well, I don't
was
know
different.
If he was That's, awake. I mean, ugh. Very low energy.
I mean, I do listen
very
to the
low
show
energy.
To go to sleep. I do yeah. listen to the show to go to sleep.
Well, That's nah. Because, when, but, I'm, when I'm hosting, you listen to it to get your youthful vigor back.
Oh, that's right.
Yes.
That's right.
All of a sudden, you want to grab your wife and go for a run in Santa Monica when I'm hosting.
Oh, I love the vigor.
Yeah.
I was called that all growing up. People would call me that.
Sorry.
And
not
I was
sorry.
Like, guilty as charged, baby. Guilty yeah. as charged.
Sorry,
I love the vigor.
Sorry, not sorry.
Sorry, not sorry.
Sorry, not
so,
sorry.
So my point is, yeah. why is it okay now for them to criticize Hillary and wring their hands for I don't know, 15, 20 minutes on MSNBC? But before that, if anybody did it, they were immediately like, what are you, crazy? How could you say that? You got to vote for Trump. So my whole point is, if we should have been doing that all through the primary. If everybody at MSNBC was on Bernie's side instead of Hillary's, we'd have a much more progressive party right now. But instead, they marginalized Bernie. They said, of course we can't have universal health care like the rest of the industrialized world. I mean, how are we going to afford cheaper drugs?
I mean, look, I I don't have my talk. No, no, I hear you. I hear you. But and the reason though that I said moving forward is there is a better late than never element to it. I mean, honestly, that's not even just like being Pollyannish. Literally, it is better late than never.
Do you think that she's going to, there is progressiveness happening, right? And all the progressives won their primaries, by the way, so far this year.
Here's what I think is going to happen with Hillary Clinton as president. I think three things are going to happen. I think one, and this is the most kind of big picture thing that you mentioned, and I talked to this really, really good, had this great guest on a while ago, a dude named Tony Caron, who wrote this piece called, it was about basically having an establishment president in an era of turbulence. So there's going to be one element where it's going to be like, yeah, I mean, a lot of this stuff is not going to be getting better, and it's much bigger and more structural than, you know, either any of these singular presidencies, and that's going to keep going on, and how she responds to that is not going to be, I doubt it will be, you know, inspired. And then I think there's going to be some stuff that the goalposts have shifted on, and she might actually do some good things that are tangible for people. Like, she'll keep up aspects of Obamacare that have helped people. She'll do some things on student debt potentially. I mean, believe me, student debt's a very real thing. And then I think on foreign policy, with the big exception of the Iran deal, which is a very big deal to me, it's not going to be good. I mean, look, it's not going to be good. I mean, I don't, you know what I mean? But I guess it's like, yeah, I mean, that's the choice. There's not, my general election choice is not available. So I go with the next one down. And believe me, it's.
Yeah, hey, you know? I get that. My whole point is that why would you be wagging your fingers at other people who are trying to pull Hillary to the left before the general election? Well, why would you call them ridiculous? Do you know what I mean? Like, that's ridiculous to do that. Hey, you people who want to make the party more progressive, you know, the anti-war wing of the Democratic Party, that you guys are being ridiculous. No, they're not. That's what they're supposed to be doing. That's what's supposed to happen at a convention. You're supposed to have an exchange of ideas. You're supposed to hear from the people who make up your base.
Well,
that's,
I think what was happening, though, to be fair, is that when people were protesting war, they were creating a triggering environment for Leon Panetta. And that was actually just this sort of act of really violent heteronormative privilege.
Can I tell you, did you find out, you know, as being a progressive, right, I'm always acutely aware of who has the power in each situation, which is why I'm more critical of Israel than I am of the Palestine, right? Of the Palestinians, right? So yes. I'm always very aware of that. But yet I found myself during the Olympics rooting for Michael Phelps. Could there be a bigger, you know, I don't know, overprivileged favorite guy? I don't know why. He's already got 26,000 medals, and I'm like, oh, let's get one more, and now he'll be happy.
Well, because you have some respect for his weed habits.
Oh, yeah. That's
that might
thing,
be some
right?
of it.
So he had a bumpy ride in his personal life where he got pulled over drunk driving. Remember that he was doing 80? He was doing 80 in a 45, which smashed the previous record of 78 in a 45. So that was real.
which also George W. Bush called a pussy move. That's not real drunk driving. 80 to 45, what are you talking about? I ran over three landscapers before I even noticed.
I don't even go in a 45 zone when I'm drunk.
Yeah. 100 in a 20. I put on the NWA.
Sorry, not sorry.
Am I right, Tony? But don't you think when it comes to sports, aren't like I'm not someone who's really like, I don't have that kind of, although it's you know, it's actually interesting though, because I was talking with somebody recently who her family had actually like come here from the Congo, and you know, she's very left-wing and everything, but she actually has a little bit more of that, like, yeah, you root for America at the Olympics or World Cup or whatever. I don't get a kind of lump in my throat at all, like, for that type of thing during the Olympics, but it is But it's not anti-America either. It's all just pure personality based. I mean, I just like an athlete or I don't. I don't care where they're from. So you like Michael Phelps?
Yeah, I do like Michael Phelps, and I do like what he's done for weed. And I you know what? It's about spectacle, too. You see that it's all – and especially like, you know, I'll never forget the opening ceremonies when China had the Summer Games. That was they had spent like billions of dollars on it, and it's amazing what you can accomplish when you rehearse at gunpoint, isn't it? I mean, it's really
– You know what they did in China that was so messed up too? Was they had that like cute, that sort of adorable little girl singing the Chinese national anthem, and it came out.
Oh yeah,
she was lip syncing because the actual girl that sang
wasn't pretty enough.
Apparently, didn't consider her cute enough. And honestly, the only other thing that I've ever heard of like that in my life was there's this really not great old LL Cool J song. I mean, it's good. It's not great. Matt loves it. It's called Doing It and Doing It and Doing It Well. You probably are into it as well, Jimmy. And it is a very lascivious song. And the woman who sang backup vocals on it apparently accused LL Cool J of not letting her tour with him because she didn't look the part, even though she sang the song. And it was just, I remember looking at that, and it was years ago. I was like, man, what an asshole. And then it was so bizarre to be reminded of that during the Chinese Olympics. Like, oh, it's just, that was creepy. It was weird. During the UK Olympics, they had the NHS was part of like their greatest accomplishments.
Yeah, that's right. I remember that, all the stuff that in the opening ceremonies about, yes.
Yeah, isn't that amazing?
Jimmy,
well, we got to get. I want to get a movie recommendation from you in a second, but first, can we play one piece of Trump sound? I want you to do this Trump sound with me, because it's so funny. Because you pointed out that we have now that like the unregistered foreign lobbyist, like dictator PR guy, who really, in the context of Donald Trump's world, is actually a pretty decent guy. Now that he's been kicked out and replaced with the racist website publisher who looks like the guy from the end of Taken. And the whole point was that Trump wanted to get rid of the dictator lobbyist guy to replace him with the racist website Taken guy because he was tired of being told that he couldn't say dickish stuff all the time. And then in the sort of ultimate dick move, the day before Manafort is fully out, Donald Trump had this to say in Charlotte, North Carolina yesterday.
Sometimes in the heat of debate and speaking on a multitude of issues, you don't choose the right words or you say the wrong thing. I have done that. And believe it or not, I regret it. And I do regret it, particularly where it may have caused personal pain. Too much is at stake for us to be consumed with these issues. But one thing I can promise you this. I will always tell you the truth.
How great is that?
So it's just theater. It's just theater now. It's just black is white, up is down. That's what when I went to a Trump rally, that's what you get this sense of, oh, so this is going to be opposite day. Right, so they have a woman come on stage to introduce him to tell him how much women love Trump. Then they have a black guy come on stage to say all lives matter.
Oh God!
So then they have Mexican women come on stage to say that they're for Trump. So it's opposite. So that's what he's doing. He goes, I'll always tell you the truth. The guy, that's a lie right there.
What I wanted them to do is I wanted him to turn it into a like they plagiarized Michelle Obama's speech. I wanted him to plagiarize Obama's 2004 breakout speech. Like, The pundits like to slice and dice us up, but there's not a red America and a blue America. There's the United States of America, and it's great. We're together, gay, straight, black, white. It's one America. It's true. But I just love, there's some level where it's like, Paul Manafort has probably been literally begging Donald Trump to say that for months. And he, nope, sorry, Paul, nope. Look. And then as soon as Manafort's out, he's like, sometimes I say mean stuff. Sorry. Not sorry.
That's what that is. Sorry, not sorry.
Total sorry, not sorry. It's incredible.
I'm telling the truth, baby. I'm telling the truth. You can't handle the truth, baby.
Yeah. Do you have a movie recommendation for us, Jimmy, before we let you go?
I can just tell you what I've watched two movies in the last week.
What did you watch?
I don't watch a lot of movies. I watched Tropic Thunder again.
That's funny.
That movie may be the funniest movie of all time.
It's a funny movie.
Just what Robert Downey Jr. does alone is unbelievable. When he plays a white guy playing a black guy, and
Tom Cruise is actually hysterical in that movie, weirdly enough.
Tom Cruise was he got the best performances out of all those people. Tom Cruise was amazing.
Yes.
Matthew McConaughey was amazing in that movie.
Yes, that movie's great.
That movie should be, really, that should have a special place. That should be in the top 100 films of all time, for sure. I'm not kidding. And, you know, it's hard for comedies to crack that, right? But
right.
That certainly should be one of them.
Right.
And then my other, so that, I would recommend that to people. If you haven't seen it, you should see it. And if you've seen it only once, you should see it again, because it still has legs. It's unbelievable. That one, and then I saw The Heiress. Have you ever seen that movie called The Heiress?
No, never heard of it.
Montgomery Clift is in it, and I'm blanking on the female lead's name. But it's about this female, she's rich. She grew up.
Jim? Jimmy.
Yeah?
I lost you.
Yeah,
for a
can
second.
You hear me?
Yeah, now go ahead.
Yeah, and it's about a woman who's homely but rich, and then Montgomery Clift, who's the most handsome guy in town, but a loser financially, wants to marry her. And so her dad has to give her that speech where he says, why do you think he wants to marry me? Because you're pretty? Because you're clever? Because you're funny? Because you have a great personality? Well, you have none of those things. He wants your money.
Oh,
and
it's horrible.
Like, oh, it was horrible. In fact, yeah, it ruined my buzz.
All right. So Tropic Thunder, one of the greatest comedies of all time, underappreciated, and The Heiress will ruin your buzz. Okay. Got it.
Yeah, the heiress, which is I wrote my wife an anniversary card.
Yes.
A couple days after we'd watched that movie, and I had tried to put that you're my heiress or something, and of course I misspelled it horribly. I had no idea there was an H in front of it.
Heiress.
She's like, what's this? I go, that's heiress, right? She's like, that's not how you spell it.
Can I ask you one last question, Jimmy, before you go?
Yeah.
Have we created a safe space for you?
You have created
great.
And I appreciate that. I've been triggered on many other shows. And my feels are very tender.
I fair enough. Well, I'm going to see you in a couple weeks, man. I'm going to come out there and do your show on TYT.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to it, man.
Yeah, looking forward to seeing you in the flesh.
All right, great, man. Talk to you soon. Thanks,
okay,
Jimmy.
Okay, please wear something short.
Later, buddy. All right, 646-257-3920. Thank you for listening, everybody. We're on vacation next week, but we have all new shows starting actually on Friday, on Monday, with a fresh two Doughboys, which will actually be in the feed for the Majority Report. If you haven't started listening to that show yet, really hope you'll join. A bunch of stuff to get to in the fun half. Try to get to all your calls and IMs because we're going away. So join us in the fun half.